second season, I am glowing. You are the sunlight in my growing. So little warmth I've felt before. It isn't hard to feel me glowing. I watch the fire that grew so low. We'll be right back. like the wind, their eyes fall calm. This is the wonder of devotion. I see the torch we all must hold. This is the mystery of the closure, closure.
Raising a child can be a trying and stressful process for any parent. Making the right decisions can be tough, especially if you weren't given a good model to follow when you were a child. Family Paths can help. Family Paths Incorporated is a nonprofit organization of mental health professionals and dedicated volunteers that provide a number of mental health, counseling, and therapy services to low-income, multi-stressed individuals and families. Family Paths Incorporated is a multicultural agency committed to serving families of Alameda County regardless of age, ethnicity, financial status, language, sexual orientation, immigration status, class, religion, gender, mental or physical ability. Family Paths has served the mental health needs of Alameda's families since 1972, and today we offer services from offices in Oakland, Hayward, and Fremont. These services include a 24-hour family support and resource hotline, a 24-hour foster parent advice line, emergency respite child care, CalWORKs case management, and positive parenting classes. We also provide counseling for infants, children, adolescents, adults, and families. Go to www.familypaths.org for more information or call 1-800-829-3777 for immediate 24-hour help. This public service announcement is brought to you by your friends at Pirate Cat Radio.
Thank you. son take a holiday. Flowers bathe and see the children play. Lay back and groove on a rainy day. Well, I can see a bunch of wet preachers. Look at them on the run. The carnival traffic noise, it sinks, the tears splashing. Even the ducks can groove, rain bathing in the parkside pool. And I'm bleeding on my windowsill, digging everything. And I'm you too.
District of San Francisco. You're listening to Pirate Cat Radio online at piratecatradio.com. Podcast, this is Welcome to La La Land, and this is your DJ operator. Coming up this hour, we have a special on Indonesian rock and roll, Malakat Nansingan. You guessed it. Welcome to La La Land. If you missed the news this morning, there was a man electrocuted. There were some students that put flour on a mountain. Some people were getting drunk and calling it an eating disorder, and what else was there? Shoot. I don't know. You missed it. You can always go back to piratecatradio.com and look up Welcome to La La Land and we'll listen to the podcast from the past if you really want to hear the news. Last week's news was really great, too, and next week's news, I'm telling you, it's going to be amazing. So if you've never heard Molly Cat Dance Singer, then you're going to be really, really happy about waking up to this, tuning in at 9 o'clock in the morning. Welcome to La La Land, my friends. Welcome back. Molly Cat Dance Singer is Indonesian, and all of these song titles on this album, Arrington de Dioniso by Molly Cat Dance Singer, are really just hard to say. And so I've typed them up on my playlist. You can go and find that playlist at piratecatradio.com. Let's just jump right into it, see what you think. If you think, give me a call, 415-341-1199. And please enjoy.
Oh, silakan, minta-minta, saya
Good. Do you love bike riding? Do you love learning about the history of Oakland? Well, why not do both? Explore Oakland and its environs with the Oakland Museum's Bike Tripping Dawsons the third Sunday of the month at 10 a.m. as they leisurely wend their way through Uptown, Downtown, Fruitvale, Port of Oakland, West Oakland, Brooklyn, or the Lake Merritt area. Reservations are a good idea and can be made at DawsonCenter@museumca.org. That's DawsonCenter@museumca.org or at 510-238-3514. Participants must be 12 or older. Bring your own bikes, helmets, and repair kits, and meet at the main entrance to the Oakland Museum on 1000 Oak Street at 10 a.m. And guess what? It's free. This public service announcement was brought to you by your friends at Pirate Cat Radio.
Bye.
why don't you put your headphones on?
Oh.
Oh, and the CD player is still running. The record player, rather. So I ran into some experts here at the Pirate Cat Radio Cafe down at 21st in Florida. Tell me about Drunkorexia and your experience.
It's a terrible abomination. That's the scourge of college life these days. What do you think, Dee?
Oh no, I'm totally opposite. Back in the day, my dear friend Jenna Tully, she decided that for 2 months she was only going to live on beer. Butch Light Draft. We even made a pilgrimage all the way to the Bushwhackers.
Yeah, <good. laughs>
yeah, I'm a total fan.
And you think it's healthy to deny yourself sustenance in order to achieve intoxication?
Yes.
And why is that?
Because you only live once.
And what, I mean, the health risks certainly outweigh the benefits, don't you think? I mean, you're blowing out your liver, you're putting your body into intense dehydration, you're denying yourself essential nutrients.
So Drunkorexia made the news today. As college campuses participate in Fat Talk Free Week, a national campaign to raise awareness of the perils of conversation that regularly includes, I'm so fat, and you look great, have you lost weight? Anorexia and bulimia aren't the only eating disorders on the table. The trend is now drunkorexia.
Interesting.
And abuse counselors are putting the word drunkorexia in line with other eating disorders because the patient uses the same types of methods as anorexia and bulimia. It just makes it with alcohol.
Right. So, I mean, and then I guess the purge comes when you have too much alcohol, right? So you're denying yourself food all day, so you get drunk quicker, which is cheaper. I mean, do you think there's a financial component for you in your experience?
I don't know. I mean, the financial component was always donating plasma when I was young, but this is slightly different, I guess.
What do you mean you'd get drunk so that you could donate more
plasma?
Yeah,
everyone would donate plasma
for
so
money.
They could go get drunk.
Oh.
You get paid
so
like 50 bucks.
So that you could get a little $50 and then go and get more drunk.
Yeah.
Right. So you needed money.
Yeah.
Really? That really happened?
Did they let you donate plasma drunk? Like,
no.
If you show up drunk?
I think if you showed up drunk, they wouldn't let you.
How would they know?
Well, I mean...
Because you're puking and skinny and drunk.
Somewhat of a medical procedure.
Yeah.
If you were on pharmaceuticals, they didn't know.
So I'm interested to know how much of this started around a financial thing, because college kids are broke all the time. And I wonder if it sort of started that way, or is it purely calories and carbs? And what role does Dr. Adkins play in this whole phenomenon?
I don't think he has a role.
Why not?
You could be the voice of change here. I mean, tell me a little bit about yourself.
Oh, well, I'm a clinician up in Seattle. I've done some research around youth and media and media literacy, and I just tend to always default to that as the precursor to everything bad that's in this culture.
The media.
Yeah, basically. You know, too much media, oversaturation, games, violence, hypersexuality.
See, I disagree. I think this is anti-media.
But tell me a little bit about yourself first.
Yeah.
Well, I used to be a professional partier. Now I'm a clinical researcher up in Seattle.
She does party really hard. She was partying last night, I have to say.
Yeah, go Giants.
Yeah.
I guess I don't think the media has anything to do with this. In reality, I think people that are drunkorexics are probably pretty anti-media, and the media isn't really a huge influencer in their lives.
Interesting. So you don't think it has anything to do with body image?
No, I think it has to do with fun.
Okay. Yes. I think it has all to do with body image and all of that.
What kind of image do you think these drunkorexic college students are looking for?
Waify, heroin, corpsey.
Did you say waify?
Yeah.
Waify.
You know, like a little bit of waify. You know, I mean...
Kate Moss.
Yeah, well,
1993.
Kate Moss is over. I mean, that's our point of reference because we're old. But if you think about what's out there now, I mean, anytime you open a fashion magazine, you see, I mean, the models now are 13, 14. Not that they weren't before, but now they actually look like they're 13 or 14 years old. So to me, they look like they're 13 or 14, and they are. But now there's no shame around that. I remember when, who was it that came? Remember there was a big shocking thing like 10 or 15 years ago when they used a very young model, Calvin Klein. Oh, Brooke Shields.
And how long ago was that?
Well, Brooke Shields, remember when Brooke, you probably don't remember Brooke Shields.
He wasn't alive.
So Brooke Shields, she was modeling jeans, and she said very seductively, nothing comes between me and my Calvins, right? And she was like 14. And so everybody was nuts because it was a very sexually provocative thing
to
say.
What does this have to do with drinking?
Well, I'm getting to that.
Well, in the last 10 years, drinking among young men and women has increased significantly.
Mm-hmm. And so is slutty behavior?
Well, maybe. Maybe slutty behavior. But so you've got youth, 13, 14, in fashion magazines now, not even pretending to be older. See, the thing with Brooke Shields is that they made her look much older. Mm. And the truth, you know, came out and everybody freaked out. Now they don't care if you're 13 or 14.
Well, that's the trend, I think, in 13 and 14-year-olds is to look much older.
Absolutely.
You know,
well, they dress like prostitutes. I mean, there was this whole article, actually. I think it was Seattle Children's Hospital just had an article about provocatively dressed teenagers. I'm not sure, but why that was happening and what's going on with tweens and why tweens. I mean, look at Miley Cyrus and her whole following and her popularity and the way she dresses. And there's like a clothing chain called Justice, and Justice is full of G-strings and and thongs for tweens. So, I mean, that's pretty suggestive, right? So anyway, how this gets back to drunkorexia is that you have an image. And so when you're 19, 20 years old, and as if that's not young or firm enough, you are now clamoring after a 13, 14-year-old body. Hairless, no pelvis, et cetera, et cetera. No hips. So what I'm thinking is that that puts more pressure on you. And you got to party because it's part of your collective pressure as a freshman.
You know, I think that the emergence of drunkorexia in the medical world is something that's going on in my generation, Generation Y,
mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
And you were saying that you blame the media for almost everything. Well, Generation Y in particular has seen the internet throughout their entire lives, and that might have something to do with it. There's just been a lot more media mm-hmm. for the sufferers of drunkorexia mm-hmm. than there were previously.
Absolutely.
when other eating disorders were all that was on the table.
Right.
You know.
Well, your exposure, your generation's exposure is like exponentially.
They say now that the average 12-year-old has seen more than 1,500 murders.
Yeah.
You know.
Is that including gaming?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And if that's not including gaming, then I wouldn't be surprised just by television.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a lot for the brain to process. You know, we didn't evolve, and jump in anytime, Dee. We didn't evolve to handle that much stimulus, right? Our brains are actually incapable of handling the stimulus that we're bombarded with. I mean, it was already getting that way when we were kids.
How do you think that's going to affect people in the long term?
I think it's very interesting. There's some very interesting researchers out there. You know, there's a Dr. Dimitri Christakis up at Seattle Children's Research Institute is doing some fascinating studies around media and how it affects children. And he's
actually affecting the brain waves or
yes.
the
well, it affects,
thought process?
It actually affects the structure of the brain because, mm-hmm. you know, as your brain's developing, like when you're an adolescent boy, right, mm-hmm. and your brain is actually firing and everything's
going through
coming
puberty
together.
And stuff like that.
Yeah. And so different parts of your brain are growing at different times. And, you know, it's almost like a muscle. When you over exercise a piece of your body, uh-huh. that's going to grow and get bigger, right?
Okay.
And the other parts.
I'm thinking of gymnasts, how they have those freak mutant sort of Hulk bodies when then they don't get their periods or menstruate or something
right.
like that. Yeah. Okay.
And so you're actually disrupting a normal biological process. And so in your brain, as your brain's growing and you're learning to, like, say, connect with other people, you're learning empathy, you're mm-hmm. learning about your own sexuality.
Or how to be social.
Or how to be social, how to communicate. And meanwhile, it's much easier to go into your room and, you know, when you're a teenager, masturbate or, you know, play a violent video game or just get
second
that solitude.
Life even.
Right. And so you isolate yourself and then you overwork that piece of your brain. And then the other parts that are supposed to be developing simultaneously with that, because your brain is, everything has to work together. It's like a quilt. Mm-hmm. They don't get exercised. And so then this part becomes bigger
and stronger.
So
the part that's not getting exercised, you think, is empathy?
Well, it could be. I mean, I'm not a neurologist, so...
Because it'd be an insane theory to say that we're creating a generation of sociopaths or something, you know what I mean?
Well, I might say that, but yeah. I mean, look at the war. You know, look at who's doing all the killing. It's all young kids. And look at what they use to recruit them. They use things
like... propaganda's been used for years and years, you know what I mean? And you can look at China, or even the Nazis will take... In Korea, they take a bunch of little kids and use them as the soldiers, because when little kids are coming at you with knives and guns, you aren't going to want to kill them. They've trained them to be these little monsters, you know what I mean? So
right. But I mean, I have a friend who is actually part of the Army recruitment program, and when he would tour... You know, they have these simulators, and so they have like these big things that look like rides, and you get in, and it's like the simulator if you were driving a tank.
It's reminding me of Toys with Robin Williams. Did you ever see that movie?
I think I did.
And it's the main military lieutenant. He's kind of putting these kids in these actual like VR games, but if they're really firing weapons somewhere else or something like that.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Oh, no, I didn't see that movie.
Sort of like Ender's Game.
Well, they do that in the movies too. Yeah. I mean, they make Army recruitment look like a video game. Mm-hmm. And
so they've got you wired, basically, you know? And so, anyway, I don't know how all this comes together.
To drunkorexia.
Let's go back to drunkorexia, because it's the result. The result is drunkorexia.
Maybe.
The result is drunkorexia? I think it's just people that can't afford cocaine. They're out there. It's like, I want to lose weight. I want to look hot.
I'm with you.
Yeah, I live in Fresno or something else. Let's drink, because I don't have some real drugs that are going to speed up my metabolism. But it's just my opinion.
Well, that's exactly. It's easier to go like buy a six pack.
Exactly. Or get someone to buy it for you. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
But see, why beer? Well, why not grass? And what's going on here?
They're defining drunkorexics as women who don't eat so that when they drink, they don't get too many extra calories. Mm-hmm. They get all their calories from beer. And, you know, beer, alcohol, high in calories.
Right.
So you don't want
to... High in carbs, high in sugars.
So you refrain from eating so that you can binge drink and not gain weight.
Right. Yeah. I mean, like yesterday, I chose at the airport in Seattle when we were delayed to have, you know, a Bloody Mary, because I knew I would get several key nutrients from that.
And Emma Thompson... She had a double Bloody Mary at 9 o'clock in the morning.
That's delicious. Yeah. That's the healthy way to start the day.
She's like the poster child for what happens after college drunkorexia.
Well, Emma Thompson just wrote an article in, I believe it was US Weekly, where she stated that her favorite lunch, because it's like, oh, what's your favorite food? What's this? Her favorite meal for lunch was a martini. Yeah. And she was like, it's, you know, a very classy, nice meal. Sometimes some people can have three or four, but I can't, but you know, whatever. And it's just like, there's a whole generation of people who use that as like a meal replacer, even if you're not going to say it's the whole way, that's all they're drinking, but they look at it as that's a calorie intake. This is a substitute meal, and it's also damaging, which I'm sure you ladies have experienced in medical areas, the effects to some extent of alcohol.
Oh, absolutely.
Definitely.
But it's got a bad name, alcohol, I think. I cook for a living. Mm-hmm. My day job, I go to school, you know, my day job is as a cook, and I found a lot of really, really positive uses for alcohol beyond just drinking it.
You mean just as a flavoring?
As an ingredient, as a catalyst in sauce making.
Mm-hmm. But you're burning off the part that's bad.
No.
Right?
Not necessarily, no.
Most of it when you're cooking.
When you're heating it up, you are losing the alcohol.
That's a myth, actually. Mm-hmm. But, you know.
Tell me more about this myth.
I want you to make rum cake. That's what I want.
Well, rum cake? Oh, I love it.
If you were to boil alcohol for a couple of hours, you'd still have at least some alcohol in there. You're not going to get rid of all the alcohol.
It's true.
If you light alcohol on fire, it's because it's higher than 40 proof, 80 proof, and at a certain temperature. If you light your alcohol on fire until it goes out, you've brought it down below 40% alcohol, and it won't burn anymore. But there's still a high percentage of alcohol.
So, my big question is, why beer? I mean, especially
in
California.
It's not necessarily beer, I don't think.
I mean, but why spirits? Why isn't marijuana the better choice?
I think it's because it's readier accessible. I mean, marijuana's not legal now, you know what I mean?
Are we working on
that? I don't think that I refrain from eating so that I can smoke more pot.
Yeah, you'll probably eat more after you're smoking the weed.
I hear what you're saying.
This is why it's an eating disorder.
But then again,
there's not enough nutrient intake due to their desire to get drunk.
But preferring to get drunk as opposed to high.
Well, and the nice thing about alcohol is you can go to a bar or you can go over to a friend's house, and it's a very social thing.
Exactly. It's way more social,
I think. And so, you know, if you have limited resources or, you know, you have a desire to look a certain way mm-hmm. and want to intake a certain amount of calories, mm-hmm. you know, it's so easy to call up your friends, especially your girlfriends, and say, oh, let's go have liquid lunch. And
I'm going to do that today.
Exactly. That sounds really good on this rainy day. But, you know, it's so socially acceptable to go and have a couple cocktails with your friends.
Right, whereas and, you can't go, like, hit the bong and, like, mm-hmm. go hang out in
right, and generally, mm-hmm. nobody would question that. Mm-hmm. You know, if you had a couple drinks and you say, oh, okay, bye-bye, you know, yeah. And they wouldn't necessarily...
It's easier to mask the problem.
Absolutely.
And you can maintain social and out and about as opposed to at your house or something.
Mm-hmm.
So are there any outcomes that we know about? I mean, are there any death rates, or is it really, does it become something where girls have to be hospitalized?
And if you have any thoughts, please feel free to call in. It's 415-341-1199.
So here's an interview mm-hmm. with Savannah, who mm-hmm. agreed to do an interview with ABC News as long as her last name wasn't used. And she says, I've done it for years and I'm still healthy. The alumni of the Greek community, Savannah says it was easy to abstain from food when it came to time to party with the help of support system made of friends.
Mm-hmm.
I do know a lot of people who skip meals to drink heavily, and don't gain any weight. Obviously, their success in this way encourages others to try it. Mm-hmm. But during her 4 years in college, Savannah attended counseling sessions for anorexia at her mother's suggestion. According to the National Eating Disorder Association, as many as 10 million females suffer from some sort of eating disorder. Of those 10 million, 40% of newly identified cases of anorexia are in young women. And Savannah says, I've been drunkorexic for years and I'm still healthy and I'm skinny. She said, that's the best of both worlds for me, so it's not likely that I'll stop doing it anytime soon.
Wow. I guess it's like you're on a slippery slope. That's my thing. It's like you know, it's just like drugs. It's like anything. You're doing it and you're okay for a little while. And then all of a sudden, your body becomes dependent on this routine. And then you have a problem, you know. And we could probably talk all day about the ramifications of being drunk all the time.
But
drunk and skinny.
We're going to get back to the music. So why don't you guys give a little sign off to your friends, shout outs, whatever you need. I love you, Mom.
Wow. That's a whole other show. I just want to give a little shout out to Zoe Bell and Brett B. Love you lots. Miss you.
Angie, wish you were in San Fran with us. Bye.
Thanks, y'all, for coming in.
Oh, thank you. Sorry.
Kita di terudah Mbak Iman dan Mbak Tuhan. Reses untuk yang paling segera kembali ke kekal. 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 Engkau bunga dari tenaga kekal.
This is the last track by Malachi Dansinger on Pirate Cat Radio. Coming up at 10 o'clock, interview with Frank Garvey.
Kita tiba-tiba di jalan persimpangan Eros dan Jiwa. Kita menyelam ke dalam bahaya bencana dan kebakaran gila. Saya sangat suka bahaya gilaan. Asuransi mari kita membakar ke dalam api kobar. Kamu sedih kesuburan, kamu kuda sembrani.
That was an entire album by Malachi Dansinger. The album was Errington de Dioniso. That's Errington de Dioniso by Malachi Dansinger, spelled M-A-L-A-I-K-A-T space D-A-N space S-I-N-G-A. And I did not announce the titles because they're really hard to say, but you can find all that information on piratecatradio.com. You're listening to Welcome to La La Land with DJ Operator, and
you can download today's playlist and listen to today's podcast and find out all those song titles. They're all really unusual, obviously. Coming up in a few minutes, interview Frank Garvey from the Omni Circus. Question: why does the web love cats? Is it because they're so cute? Does the popularity of cats really come down to their inherent fluffy cuteness? Images and videos of cute cats were popular before the advent of the internet. As the co-founder of Know Your Meme points out, she suggests we've always adored the feline species. It's just that the internet provides a modern, one-click way to share such content. So why is it that the collective web is a cat person, so to speak? Why are these so many kitty pics and videos cluttering up the internet, and what is it about the feline-themed content that makes it so weirdly shareable? Also in the news, oral sex linked to rise in men's throat cancer. For years now, doctors have urged young women to be vaccinated against HPV, which is believed to cause cervical cancer, but now growing research in Europe and the United States